Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
It's a brand new best podcast in baseball. As the Cardinals approach the 2025 MLB draft, they have the fifth overall pick. It's the first time in at least a generation that they've picked that high. The last time was 1998 when they selected J.D. Drew, which was not only a transformative pick for the draft, it became a transformative pick for the Cardinals. They later flipped him as part of a package to get Adam Wainwright, who would come to help define a whole era for pitching for the Cardinals and contending for the Cardinals. Of course, included 200 wins for the Cardinals. That's the kind of pick they're dealing with coming a year after they had the seventh overall pick. This could be a transformative time for them when it comes to the talent available to them in the draft, and all of the pressure is on. So who better to talk to about it than Baseball America's editor-in-chief, J.J. Cooper? He and his staff will flood the zone of draft coverage next week in Atlanta, so look for him there, but listen to him here in a brand new Best Podcast in Baseball. Cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and it's rapidly approaching the Major League Baseball draft. The Cardinals have the highest pick in a generation. They sure hope it's a generational player. And who better to go to talk about the draft than the biggest name when it comes to covering the minors and amateur baseball, the best source for draft coverage in baseball? I'm talking, of course, about Baseball America and its editor-in-chief, J.J. Cooper. J.J., thank you so much for joining me. I'm eager to talk with you about this. I'm fascinated by what this could mean for the Cardinals, mm-hmm. but also the timing of it. They had a winning record last year, and they have the fifth pick. This is the lottery in action. And oh, by the way, it comes at a time when they're transitioning to a new front office. Can you think of a more like defining pick for the Cardinals, given all the extracurricular things going on?
I would say no. And I would say, well, let's tie to this also the fact that from what they did last year, right? Like this is a Cardinals team that, as a general rule, I would say for the most of the last 25 years, you know, until you get back to J.D. Drew and all in the 90s, but in the 21st century, you could really say like the Cardinals normally are picking more kind of at the back of the first round. And here they are last year, kind of by whatever you want to call it, earned circumstance or whatever. But this year also by winning the lottery, here they have back-to-back premium picks, like where you are sitting there knowing you don't know what player is going to get to you, but you know that one of the absolute slam dunk, one of the top players on your board is going to be sitting there when you pick.
Yeah. Last year worked out for them where a guy who some folks thought might be the number one overall pick, he had an injury mm-hmm. in college at West Virginia. His sophomore year, he was probably the best hitting prospect in college baseball.
He won batting champion.
Yeah. And had a lot going for him. Like wasn't like just had the look of a rising hitter. Injury holds him back. Cardinals see who goes at the fifth pick, and it kind of dawns on them they're going to get, you know, the two-way slugger who's now already in the majors from Florida, or the high average future, you know, surefire quality hitter out of West Virginia. And they're like, all right, well, this is going to work out because they had both of those guys as top five picks. So it's eager to see now. I'm eager to see what they do now that they actually have a top five pick.
And the other thing I would say with that is I can get into trouble of I don't want to make too rash of a judgment too quickly.
Sure.
But the key thing that does stand out, right? This far away from last year's draft, you cannot say, oh, well, the best pick in last year's draft was Chase Burns, or it was Nick Kurtz, or it was JJ Weatherholt. You don't know. We don't know that.
Right.
But I will say what we do know. At this point, a year later, The one thing that can happen is you can either have a player who you're like, he is living up to what the expectations were for the player largely, or you can have someone you're like, oh, there's a lot more problems here. There's a lot. This is not what we expected to see. Right. And JJ Weatherholt has, I would say 100%. Yes. I know that Christian Moore taken right after him and Cam Smith have made the big leagues already. Like there are players taken after him and made the big leagues already, which is really fast. But JJ Weatherholt is 100% kind of, he is what he was advertised to be. He's a really good hitter. He's going to have defensive value. He's going to move quite quickly. He just got promoted to AAA. Mm-hmm. And I bring that up just because there have been years where you go back and you say, to take again, lower round pick, but Chase Davis at this point, the chances of Chase Davis, who was a late first round pick, but they're the Cardinals 2023 pick, the chances of him being a star are quite low. Mm-hmm. You know, we can say that 2 years out. That's what I'm saying. Like a year out, you can with JJ Weatherholt say, we don't know if he can be a star, but it would be stunning at this point if he's not like a big leaguer of multiple years, those kind of things where you could be sitting here at this time if you're the Cardinals and if you whiffed on the pick where you're like, we don't know what we got here. I mean, to take an example, like Seaver King, who went 10th overall, middle infielder. I'm not saying he's not going to. That was another top 10 pick college middle infielder. I would say at this point, the chances of Seaver King being better than JJ Weatherholt are pretty low, even though it's just 1 year after the draft.
Yeah. You want to keep interesting sidebar here? Dan Kantrovitz with the Cubs, who runs their draft and obviously ran the Cardinals draft for several years, including the one where they picked Michael Wacha and got him to the majors within a year. And then he was NLCS MVP, all that stuff. He had a media availability in Wrigley and they were asking about Cam Smith, right? And how fast he moved and obviously the trade that took place and everything. And he was just talking about like exactly like you did. No one could really count on him moving that fast to the majors. And some of it was the opportunity that Houston gave him. Some of it was them validating the trade that they made to get him, all of that. And I mentioned, I was like, yeah. And a lot of it was Nolan Arenado saying no. Like how much do you see Cam Smith at third base in spring training? If Nolan Arenado is their third baseman, like it just, you think about like the trickle down of that decision completely unrelated to anything mm-hmm. else. But if Nolan Arenado said, yeah, sure, I'll go to the Astros, then how does spring training look for Cam Smith? You know, and the noise that he makes.
The sliding doors. And that's another thing I wrote about at Baseball America recently is that I think does tie into the Cardinals pick here, which is the calculus has changed. I've been at BA for 23 years now, and I can't tell you how many times I've written and tried to explain to fans. It's like, When we put in a mock, you know, a team that has a good catcher and we mock a high school catcher to them. Yeah, and it's like, but we already have a catcher. Why are we drafting a catcher? And it's like, no, this is not the NFL draft. You don't draft for need. You draft for talent. I'm starting to tweak that a little bit. And I'm talking to people in baseball who are tweaking that a little bit because Cam Smith is an example of this. Chase Burns is an example of this, where if we're now in a world where the best college top of the draft, top 10, top 15 picks, not beyond that, but top 10 pick draft picks, if Paul Skeens is going to be the best pitcher in baseball, arguably, or one of the top five by draft day the year after he was drafted, if, you know, like we talk about Nick Kurtz and Cam Smith and all who are batting in the middle of orders for teams before the next draft rolls around. If you're the Cardinals, who I do think for all the transition, for all the changeover, do look at it and say, this was a gift that fell from the sky, this pick. Mm-hmm. You want to take the top talent, but you also, like, as we look at the players who may be available, for instance, if Jamie Arnold is on the board, sitting there at 5, FSU lefty, is there a little bit of incentive to maybe take him if you think, hey, if we draft Jamie Arnold and he's what we expect him to be, we're not going to pencil him into our Cardinals rotation for opening day 2026, but we would realistically think he'll be in that rotation by mid-season 2026. If that's the case, that changes your offseason as opposed to like, we talk about Eli Willits, who's a very talented, you know, shortstop, high school shortstop. But if you take Eli Willits, he's part of a plan for like, hey, we hope he can be a cornerstone guy in 28, 29, 30, you know, is when he arrives because he's a high school pick. I don't know if that changes the calculus a little bit if you think, hey, we're going to be in it next year. And by if we can acquire, draft a guy at the top of this, with the top of our draft class, who's going to make an impact for us next year, it does kind of alter how you can devote resources as far as trades, free agency, you know, everything in the offseason in a way that 10 years ago we wouldn't have talked that way. But now, like you said, you bring up Cam Smith. The Astros were like, you know, Nolan Arenado and all this. And then, you know, instead they end up acquiring, you know, they end up with Cam Smith. And here you go, like, okay, we're going to move him in the outfield. He's batting cleanup for them. Mm-hmm. He's been like, they trade Kyle Tucker away. And I'm not saying Cam Smith's Kyle Tucker because he's not. But to bring back a reasonable, like, not like a zero in return, but a guy right. who's batting cleanup for you, who you're going to have for the rest of the decade plus, that's really kind of changes the calculus of these things.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that came up with Kantrowitz was he was talking about you might be seeing teams draft more for need because they're willing to develop at the major league level more than ever. You know, that's also changing as you see younger players get to the majors, players get to the majors faster. You're starting to see the condensed kind of expectation of a first round pick and the willingness to develop at the major league level. That has to do with also the shrinking of the minor leagues and the fewer rosters there. So all of these things are like combining to push, you know, it's interesting because Major League Baseball wants the theater of the other sports drafts, right? By bringing it all into the All-Star game and everything. And they would really like all the chatter and all that stuff. As you know, they want to promote the draft more. And it's hard to do that when you're doing a draft of like, hey, a guy you might see 3 years from now. It's a hard kind of thing to sell to fans. But through just the natural push of everything, they might actually get their draft that they want, where, you know, the first handful of picks are like, hey, you'll see this guy next year.
If you are running a promo on ESPN or MLB Network for the draft this year, there's no way you are not pointing out that at this time 2 years ago, Paul Skenes was being announced as the number one pick. And Paul Skenes is a multi-time all-star at this point. You know, like if you are doing this draft right now and you don't say, show the Cubs select Cam Smith, and you point out that Cam Smith is batting cleanup a lot of nights for a playoff contender, a team that's likely going to the playoffs. If you don't point out, you know, that Chase Burns is already in the Reds rotation, like I don't know if it's intentional or accidental, or I can't say it's all intentional because so many things have happened here that are outside of even MLB's control, right? Like,
yeah,
why has this happened? You can say like the smaller minors, the reduction of number of levels of minors, 165 player domestic rosters in season, all that has played a role. That could play a role. But a lot of it also is that you had NIL take off for college sports, where all of a sudden you literally, we have a player who we projected, like, I don't know if Dean Curley from Tennessee, who we projected at one point this year as a top 15 to 20 pick, shortstop / second baseman, third baseman, had some throwing problems late in the year. His draft stock kind of fell. He might make more sense to go back to Tennessee, probably make very solid in NIL, and then go back into the draft next year, which is also going to reduce. But if he did that, the team drafting him next year is going to know a little bit more about him than they do right now. But when you throw in transfers and all, where you have these really, again, you don't want to, I don't want to make it sound regional, but it is, it's like you have these SEC and ACC super teams being built, which means that kind of the top players are competing against the other top players in season. I do think that that speeds up the cycle. I don't think it's coincidental that a lot of these players we're talking about, the vast majority, it's not all, but the vast majority of them are ACC and SEC players.
Yeah,
it's where it's like they're the ones who are jumping so fast.
It's become a shadow minor league or a de facto minor league. level.
It's, and it, in some ways, we can't even say it's amateur baseball going into pro baseball, because some of these players, like LSU, has players who are making good money for mm-hmm. them right now. And then they'll, and again, this is also changes the dynamic. When we talk about the draft, we're talking about the first round. The first round, if you're a first rounder, you are making seven figures. You are making life-changing money. Mm-hmm. By the time we get to later on day two, it's now a two-day draft. It was a three-day until this year, but day two, and you're talking about the 11th, 12th, 13th round, you're talking about $125,000 bonus off. Not to poo-poo that, but if some of these players, it may be something where, depending on who they're with and what their role is, they may can make more money in college baseball like than they can in pro baseball right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, with all of that as context mm-hmm. then, JJ, you have the fast-moving guys, the Paul Skenes All-Star, all this stuff. What can Cardinal fans reasonably expect at number five? And what could they dream on getting at number five?
So this draft this year at the top is very different, I would say, than last year's draft. And so, okay. like, I would expect this to be, if you're going to talk about, like, last year we talked about these fast-moving hitters. You know, again, Chase Burns is in there too, but these fast-moving hitters that we just talked about, you know, mm-hmm. the Cam Smiths, the Nick Kurtz, the J.J. Weatherholtz and all of the world, the Jack Caglione's, right? We have these guys who are all in the majors before the draft. Last year was a really good college hitter draft. Mm-hmm. This year is a very good high school infield draft, college starting pitching draft at the top. But when it comes to college position players, especially, there are a couple, but like I would say that the likelihood is when the Cardinals pick at five, most likely their choices are going to come down. And it depends a little bit on how the board sorts out above them, but mm-hmm. they're probably going to have premium college starting pitchers on the board. We mentioned the Jamie Arnold. I would say at this point, I would be surprised. Cade Anderson was kind of the star of the LSU national champions.
Yep.
Probably be off the board by then, but we don't know. But Cade Anderson, Jamie Arnold, you know, I think it's probably literally for a Tyler Bremner, but it's not crazy to say, you know, that's another arm. Liam Doyle from Tennessee, who's yep. kind of the fascinating guy because he has this great fastball. And then scouts aren't as confident on his secondaries, but analysts think that there's a lot there that could be done. So you have this kind of group of starting pitchers, college starting pitchers, who all fit in this range where you're like, okay, if you want to go a college starting pitcher, you are going to be able to draft somebody at this pick who has had college success, has been productive, but on top of that, probably can move pretty quick. But the other part of it is the mm-hmm. high school infielders, where if you have an Eli Willits, I don't think that Ethan Holliday, younger brother of Jackson Holliday for the Orioles, son of Matt Holliday, former Cardinal, I don't think that he'll be there on the board at five, but if he was,
well, they'll take wow. him. I mean, yeah, if they'll take him. Yeah, that's a slam dunk but they don't expect him to get past the Rockies.
I would, and the same things that we just laid out, I can't imagine yeah. the Rockies do feel like Ethan Holliday's floor. Like that does feel like the point where it's like, I just can't imagine. Rockies fans are rightfully a not particularly thrilled group right now. I yeah. think that yeah. would, they might storm Coors Field at that point.
It's such an interesting contrast because obviously those are the two teams that had Matt Holliday, the father, the longest. They, you know, the Cardinals tried to trade for him from the Rockies, eventually needed him to go to Oakland so that then they could work out the trade. He's a Cardinal Hall of Famer. They saw Ethan and Jackson grow up here. You know, they did grow up here. There was at one point in time, there was a youth league baseball team here that had the son of Matt Holliday and the son of Albert Pujols on it here in St. Louis. So that was a pretty good team. And, you know, so they know him really well. And yet you have this contrast between the Rockies, who could take a guy who might, and the fans would be like, man, we want the name. We want the name recognition, right? That's the buzz. Give us something to believe in for year 2028, 2029, whereas the Cardinals are at a point where their fans are impatient. And they're like, with number five, give us someone who already has 20 home runs in the majors. Goodness gracious. You know, can we get the guy here now? Because we need something good. So I like that contrast too. And the pressure that that puts even slightly on the team about like fan expectation, or better way to put it is brand expectation.
Okay, let me ask you a question as someone sure. who covers this, you know. What is feeling of Cardinal Nation right now? Like not the team, but the fan base right now. Are they, I feel like my sense is that this is actually kind of like this transition mm-hmm. has brought back some kind of patience, but optimism a little bit. Is that fair?
I think there's an undercurrent of that. And I think there is an understanding that change is going to take place. And I think, as this season unfolds, there's been some pleasant surprises for the fans with the style of baseball this team plays, and then the frustrating reminders that they're not at the level of the National League greats, which is what the expectation is around here. I think there is some trepidation that they might be entering a phase where they're not a small market team that acts like a big market team. They're just going to be a small market team. And they're going to have to find edges in the draft and development. And they may not have the stars that they once did. And I think that's adding to the frustration. So I think there is this undercurrent of, okay, a new era is coming, but why won't it get here already? Get here already. Cause there's a real deep sense of fatigue, not just from the loudest voices online, but from the general fan base. And you can see that in ticket sales and the slowing of the attention on the team and everything like that. But there seems to be like a fatigue for this era and wanting something new to cling on to. I think fatigue is the word that I would use to describe the entire fan base, with that undercurrent of hopefulness for new. And I don't know if patience is a word that I would apply, though. There's okay. an impatience. They want a pennant. They want to win again. They want to be the Cardinals. And that manifests mostly online with what I called the other day fangry, where the fangs mm-hmm. are out and they're angry and they're fans and they're just vicious. And I think that fits into the fatigue too. So you just have this spectrum of fatigue, and it's just how it manifests.
And I would say with that, the challenge that they face is looking just in the division. The Brewers do, like what you just laid out, is trying to be really smart, and the Brewers are smarter. Like the Brewers yep. are like, do everything Absolutely. That the Cardinals want to do. They're doing it now, and they've done it now for like 7 years. And I know they haven't had postseason success at the level. Like if the Brewers and Cardinals traded, places with the Cardinals' success in the postseason over the years, Cardinals fans would not be like, we're great every year in the regular season. We make the playoffs every year. We're good with that. There needs to be pennants, like you said, and things like yeah. that. And then now the Cubs, after this like dip, have kind of gone back to being kind of remembered again a little bit of like, oh, wait, we are in Chicago. We are a team that like
any day now. Yeah.
Right. We can acquire Kyle Tucker. We can, sign free agents. We can have what they have, a very deep lineup now.
Yeah. I mean, they're acting like the Cardinals. I mean, the Kyle Tucker move, if they sign him, that's a Cardinal move. Like that, yes. that's the one that it's like, oh, hey, Cardinals, you know what you were so successful at for years? They're going to try to do it. I don't know if it'll happen, but if they pull it off, then Kyle Tucker is their Matt Holliday. And look how that mm-hmm. worked out for the Cardinals.
That reinforces that fan base. Like this is the part yeah. that I've written about this. I think I'm not the only one, but like, it does feel to me like something that has kind of been a disconnect in recent years for some front offices, for some teams, is like there used to be an understanding that you need to be rational, you need to win, but you also have to sell a plan and hope. And yeah. there's been a lot of teams where I feel like, and I'm not just poking this at the Cardinals, but like there's been a lot of teams where if you have an off season and the off season sales pitch is, We hope this year will be slightly better than last year, but the names are going to be the same. The faces are going to be the same. And we know we weren't very good last year. That doesn't sell tickets, right? Yeah. Like that's, and that's where it used to be, like, you know, being the age I am, I'm not saying like making an irrational move where the Braves signed Bruce Sutter, speaking of a former Cardinal, like to a massive deal. And it's like, hey, we added a closer to our terrible team. Now we're going to be great. I'm not saying that the baseball should go back to that, but it is something where you see like what the Padres have done. The Padres haven't had significant postseason success, but they have a fan base now that loves them.
Yeah.
Because there's something to be said for, we're really trying. We're going to try every year and come along for that ride with us. That's easier to sell to fans, I think, than be patient with us. We hope at some point everything will click.
Absolutely. So, JJ, with this draft, I've heard it described this way, and I would love to get your feedback on it because of how it relates to the Cardinals at number five, is that there's not really a consensus number one. There's not really a consensus top seven. And that maybe after the draft, after that first round gets past Ethan Holiday, the difference between players is rather marginal for a good stretch of the first round. That it would not surprise anybody if the 22nd pick has as much upside as the 7th pick, for example. It's just going to be the team's preference or the team scouting or the team using its bonus purse strategically that determines some of those spots. You know, that's different than last year where there was that level of impact player that seemed to go maybe 8-9 deep there. So what I wonder is, do you agree with that premise? And then what a bummer of a time to get number five if number five and number 22 might not be all that different.
I generally agree with that premise. That's how this draft is perceived. I would agree with that. Here's a part, like, again, I love studying this stuff, and then I would love it, but I like admitting things I don't know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In recent years, the last two drafts, it doesn't mean if you get from 15 on in the first round that there aren't players. Like, I look at a couple of years ago, you know, like, I look at the 2023 draft, and Colt Emerson and, you know, guys like that, George Lombard Jr., Kevin McGonigal, are all top prospects. These are high school guys taken in the second half of the first round who are really good prospects. But if you said with that class, it's like Paul Skeens and Jacob Wilson and, you know, Kyle Teal, Matt Shaw, these college guys, Wyatt Langford, who made immediate impacts, it does feel like the last couple of drafts, there have been a pretty clear delineation of like the top 15 picks where not every pick's a hit. But there's a clear delineation there. And then you get back to 2020-21, and there's not as much. And it's like, okay, it could be just we've had two drafts like this in a row. It could be that COVID really affected the 2021 and even to some extent the 22 drafts, right? Because it tore up development. There was a lost year, all that. I don't know. But what I would say with this year is there is a clear, like what I would say at the top is, if you're willing to go with where the draft sets up, the thing that you would have 15 on in this draft, there are guys who might pop. Your chances, though, of also taking someone who really doesn't pop goes up too, right? Like when we talked about some of the names we talked about, if Jamie Arnold's sitting on the board, there are absolutely probably pitchers who will be taken after him who are going to be better big leaguers than Jamie Arnold. Very possible. Just the law of numbers and averages, right? Oh, like sure. If you said, I get this pitcher and you get the next 25 pitchers, chances are some of them are going to break through.
Right.
But it's hard to talk to a scout. It's hard to talk to an evaluator this year who looks at Jamie Arnold, looks at what he's done at FSU for multiple years. And it's like, he's not going to be a big leaguer of some quality, right? Like he might be, you know, he's a lefty, but like, again, stay in the division. He might be a Mike Leake type where Mike Leake moved really fast. And then you're like, okay, Mike Leake's a number four starter. And that's kind of just what he generally was. Mm-hmm. He could be that, but like, you're not whiffing if you do that. The thing that's going to be a challenge at five is, like you said, okay, if you have two guys on your board that you think, or three guys on your board that you think are very similar. Last year, as you said, the Cardinals basically got the guy kind of that last of that top tier of which there have been guys after that who've performed, but that top tier that was perceived at the time is like, Weatherholt's the last one of those guys on the board. Taking him, you're like, we're not trying to bargain shop or anything like that. We're just taking the best talent. We're going to sign him and he will move quickly. This year, you could look at it and say, we like Jamie Arnold, but you know, if we think Tyler Bremner's similar and he'll sign for less, maybe we shift some of that money because there will be intriguing options with later picks. I could see that more likely this year, but at the same time, the flip side is if you go with the high school infielder group, you're at a top tier there, and that tier, the next tier of that is another tier down, significant tier down, where if you think that an Eli Willits or someone like that, I'm not as much, or Billy Carlson, but someone like that is like, this guy's our guy. You know, you're not going to get another shot at a talent like that later on because there's only a few of them. And by pick 12, pick 14, the last of those is going to be gone.
All right. So let's talk about the shortstops because Reggie Willits and a lot of the mock drafts has been tied to the Cardinals. They're going to, just the math tells us, one of the top college lefties is going to be available. You mentioned Jamie Arnold, Doyle. One of those guys is going to be available at five. And the Cardinals have had their, you know, we talk about it. They tend to roll out the established college starting pitcher is their cast type. They love that guy. They bring him straight out of central casting. The list is long from an established big program. You can go Lance Lynn, Michael Wacha, Dakota Hudson, Marco Gonzalez. We can name them all that they've gone through. Michael McGreevy is next on deck here. He'll be in the rotation soon. So, so we know one of those three college pitchers will be available at five, but I want to talk about like the middle infielders, the shortstop, specifically Willits, who's tied to them in mock drafts. But there's also some really intriguing college shortstops who probably will go in that 8 to 15 range, maybe, including an SEC player of the year. Is there, like, when you look at them, should the Cardinals overlook them at five? Some of those college shortstops?
Now, again, that's generally been kind of one of the safer demographics in the draft, right? One of the points I will make that ties them to the high school side is there are two things. I'm doing a piece for Baseball America about draft demographics. I'm looking at all 30 teams and kind of trying to look really big picture at trends. And two trends that jump out for the Cardinals. The Cardinals emphasize, or at least have, I'm not going to say past performance indicates future draft pick results, but they have emphasized draft age really more than almost than probably any other team. Their high school players that they draft are usually their median age is younger. Their college players they draft, their median age is younger. And I bring that up because if we're talking about the high school side, Billy Carlson is 19 at the age of, at the time of the draft. JoJo Parker, also in this mix, we should mention, is 18.9. He's almost 19. And we bring that up because Eli Willits is literally, he reclassified to, he was supposed to be a high school junior this year. He's 17. He's just 17 and a half now at the time of the draft. So if the Cardinals stick with their, we like our players younger, we think that that gives them more development potential and all that. Well, Eli Willits checks that box. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned the pitchers though as well. And I will get back to the college shortstop. On the pitcher side, the Cardinals also take shorter pitchers. They do not emphasize height in their pitchers. They have the shortest median height of the pitchers they've drafted since 2020 of all 30 MLB teams. The Yankees draft the tallest, the Cardinals draft the shortest. And I bring that up because of this group we're talking about, the average Cardinal pitcher that they draft is 6 foot one, a little over 6 foot
That's
one.
Amazing.
Jamie Arnold's 6 foot one. And I say that because when we say 6 foot one, when we talk about the draft, you know, if you're listed under 6 foot, that probably means you're 5 foot nine. You know, everyone gets rounded up to 6 foot, but they draft shorter pitchers and Jamie Arnold fits that. So, but with those college shortstops, the thing that is the concern, I would say, is Ava Arquette, who's the top on our board for that. He's the 6 foot five shortstop. He's kind of more of the could be really impactful offensively. Maybe you have a better shortstop that moves him to third base. Mm-hmm. He fits in that group. But then if you get past him, the Merrick Houstons of the world, the you know, the Weehigh Aloys that you talked about, the Arkansas's, you know, yeah, SEC player of the year.
Yeah.
There's more offensive questions with those guys.
Okay.
Usually when you talk about a college shortstop at the top five, top 10, you're usually talking about that guy who you're like JJ Weatherholt last year. You're like, he may play shortstop. He may be a second baseman. He may be a third baseman, but this guy's got to really hit. Mm-hmm. I would say that Aloy and Houston face a little bit more questions about their hit tools, which makes it a little tougher to push them that high up the board.
Do you think Arquette makes it to five?
Probably not. But if he did, that's a really interesting one because, again, you are talking about a 6'5" college shortstop who made strides this year again as at the plate. He might end up being a third baseman long term. He's 6'5", so it's not crazy to think that.
Right.
But he does have power potential. He's got long levers. He's a more physical guy than these other guys we're talking about.
Which is different than what the Cardinals have taken, which I mean, obviously Jordan Walker is a very physical guy, but he was a young high school.
He was that 17.6 type age guy, you know, who was, where is he going to play defensively? But we think he's going to mash.
All right. So here we come to the crux of it, JJ. How do you see this shaping up for the Cardinals? And from your vantage point, your expertise, what's the impact pick that they could take? How would you play this? Would you play it for the future? Would you play it for the present?
I mean, a lot of that does depend. Obviously, we don't know how the board, we never know how the board right ahead of them is going to set up, right? Because we're going to operate on the assumption that it's Willits and Arnold are both there. And we're assuming that Ethan Holliday's gone.
Yep.
Kate Anderson's gone. Let's say Ava Arquette is gone, right? So like we're in our most recent mock, which I want to say Carlos Collazo does way more work on that
absolutely
than I do. So I want to make, I want to shout him out on that. But like, let's even say that Liam Doyle's gone, right? So those are the guys off the board. I would say in that case, I would say Jamie Arnold. Like, I do think Willits fits very much a lot of the things the Cardinals seem to look for. But that said, with there kind of being this transition and with the Cardinals, like, I don't feel like that the Cardinals look like there is a value to proximity, right? Like,
if you can get
Bobby Witt Jr., I don't care if you have to wait a few years, right?
I love the fact that we're having the same conversation that you and I had like 15, 16 years ago about the value of proximity.
But especially, like, there is a reason. I'm not saying it's not kind of dumb, but there's a reason in the NFL that you could pretty much every year trade a second rounder this year for a first rounder next year, right?
Yeah.
That's the value. That's the calculus is, I will give you two hamburgers tomorrow for one hamburger today. Well, it's not that strong in baseball, but at the same time, if you hit on one of these college guys, if you think he's a premium talent and you hit on him, the impact he gives quickly is important because I know that, again, baseball, there is longer time frames, but like, if you're like, for instance, if you're Chaim Bloom and you are now, you know, kind of ascending to that role, and Jamie Arnold's part of that rotation, and that helps you to be, let's say, a playoff team next year, you know, because you get to 88 wins or whatever. It's not a pennant, it's not, but it gets you to the playoffs next year because you have a stronger rotation. You might, like, maybe you come back and regret that 5 years from now because Eli Willits has turned into a really good player. But at the same time, you're talking at that point, you're hoping that Jamie Arnold's like, well, he's in his second year of arbitration now. He's been a really valuable member. And again, we see like the other thing that is happening here is you are getting, you know, again, if you are equating these to the free agent market, you're getting in some cases better pitchers than you're going to get on the free agent market for a lot cheaper. And now again, there is risk, but there's also risk when you sign the 32-year-old in free agency too.
Great point. That is Baseball America's editor-in-chief, JJ Cooper. He's been at Baseball America for 23 years, been editor-in-chief for 3 years. They do a tremendous, comprehensive, just flood the zone coverage of the MLB draft. They'll be there in Atlanta covering the draft and bringing a bunch of stuff. But it's not just the draft that Baseball America is great at. JJ, you have a podcast recently where you go into some sleeper prospects for people to know, and there's a Cardinal that gets into that. How can people listen to that and find out?
Just check out the Baseball America, our podcast feed, but also Baseball America YouTube channel. Just search Baseball America on YouTube. Eshawn Henderson is in there. We also have, speaking of that, we just did a full update of all of our team top 30s, top 100 update, but also team top 30s. So with that, like if you want to see how the Cardinals, how we've reshuffled our Cardinals list, mm-hmm. you guys are moving up. There are a couple of guys who really are moving up on that list.
Yeah, JJ soared, right? Yeah. Huh? And JJ jumped too.
Yes. Yes. JJ Weatherholt is now, like, partly because of graduations, but he is in that top tier mm-hmm. of, we have, that's one thing I'll say for baseball right now. I always get excited when we have a lot of young shortstop prospects, and we've got a lot of great shortstop prospects. And people always say, well, why are you so excited because of shortstop? Because we don't know, like, they're all going to play shortstop, but do you care that Jackson Merrill plays center field for the Padres? Do you care that, you know, this guy moved to third or second or whatever? Mm-hmm. The shortstops are the ones who play everywhere. They're the stars.
Yep. Shortstops play everywhere. Look for the great shortstops. And if a team is collecting them, that's going to be a really athletic right. and good team. Yeah.
JJ Weatherholt, like if you got Mason Winn and you say, oh, JJ Weatherholt's going to be a second baseman because of that, or a third baseman. That's fine. That just means you're better now because you've got a great defender at those positions as well.
Excellent. Thank you, JJ. You can find all of his work at Baseball America, and do tune in for the constant coverage that they'll have next week at the MLB draft. Cardinals pick 5th overall. But JJ, man, Baseball America is always number one when it comes to MLB draft. So thank you so much for this time.
Thank you for the time.
Special thanks to Editor-in-Chief of Baseball America, J.J. Cooper. He's been there for more than 20 years, been the Editor-in-Chief for 3 years. You can find his work at baseballamerica.com. You can, of course, search YouTube and get the podcast that we spoke about where he talks about the sleeper prospects. They also are doing updated top 100s, updated top 30s, all of it there available at baseballamerica.com. Of course, you can find the draft coverage there as well. Look for JJ Cooper on X, formerly known as Twitter. And look for the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. It's available on Spotify, on iTunes. Rate and review and subscribe. Subscriptions make sponsorships possible. Sponsorships make this podcast possible weekly this season. So thank you all for all of the comments and criticisms and compliments and direction you've given this podcast through the years. The Post-Dispatch will be there at the MLB draft and at the All-Star game in Atlanta, providing constant daily coverage for STLtoday.com and in the pages of the Post-Dispatch. That's the best to find, the biggest, most comprehensive Cardinals coverage you can. Certainly most words and inches devoted to covering baseball for a baseball city. For the best podcast in baseball, brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Enjoy the All-Star break, the Midsummer Classic, one of the best events, one of my favorite events to cover. Looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.